Welcome to Until the Bell Rings. I'm your host, Crystal J. Miss Marks, if you've ever taken my class. Here's the deal. I'm for inclusive and equitable education because it better serves the young people that are relying on us to prepare them for whatever comes next. Today, Coach E and I will be joined by Jessica, a former member of the De La Salle administration. She's going to tell us about her own experience and hopefully answer a few questions for us. So stick around as we continue this journey through the hallowed hallways of my high school. All right, so welcome back. I've spoken previously about a big turning point for me at De La Salle was learning that the administration purposely arranged the rooms for admissions testing day to essentially hide the number of Black students that were present that day. Today's guest is Jessica. She was director of admissions at the time and was actually in the room when that decision was made. I kind of want to revisit it, see what I missed, and just get more details about what happened that day. So I'm actually going to let Coach E take the reins on this conversation because I think she's going to be able to ask questions I wouldn't think of since she's not as familiar with the people or the culture of the school. So Coach E, take it away.
Hi, so Jessica, my question for you kind of was, what is the process for admissions at De La Salle?
Yeah, so when I was director of admissions, the process would be students would apply, their applications would come into my office, then in so they apply in the fall. In January, there's a region-wide testing day or citywide testing day for all Catholic school admissions. And following that, we get their test scores back. That becomes part of their application package. And then their applications are rated according to the way the school does it. In our case, we used a matrix that I had developed with other admissions directors from the LaSallian network, based on grades, behavior, test scores, and then civic type things like extracurricular activities, involvement, that sort of thing, and an interview. Every student did an interview with one of our faculty or administrative personnel.
Okay, and I'm guessing because I don't understand any of this, public school, you know, we have our attendance zone, and if you're in our zone, you're coming to us. So with that, Catholic school, that costs money, everyone pays tuition, or what is tuition, or how does that all work?
Yeah, so our school is tuition based, so every student pays tuition. It's required for everybody, so everybody does pay. There is financial aid available as well as grants. And again, I'm just talking about when I was there. It's been a couple of years, but that's how it worked when I was there.
So do they have students that are possibly scholarships, or does that happen at that school?
Yeah, scholarships are based on academic scholarships. And then there were things like the ACE program or the Arete program, which were financial based need type scholarships outside of the school. And then the school itself even had some financial aid options for students. And they went through a program called FACTS, which is pretty common across private schools. It's one of the common administrative programs that you can use to help evaluate students' need.
But I would say probably the majority of the students are paying tuition. And so it's probably a small percentage of people that are actually scholarshiped or I guess get the grants or whatever like that.
Yeah, at De La Salle, it's a pretty, I don't know, I can't remember exactly the breakdown. There were hardly any students that were full financial aid or scholarship. based, but many, many students with some level of financial assistance.
Okay. So I asked the question because I feel like, and just knowing what I've heard from Ms. Marks, I don't know, Crystal, what are we calling you?
Crystal's fine.
It appears to me that a lot of the decisions that were made on that day comes back to finances. And so that's why I'm kind of just wondering like what the makeup of the school was and what that, now there definitely were other decisions or to me things behind it, but a lot of it has to do with how the bottom line was going to be affected. And I know in education, like even in public schools, a lot of our decisions are based on, again, attendance zone, come to school, number of kids we have, doing proper attendance, because that all affects the bottom line, the finances that the school gets allotted. Okay. So that's why I'm kind of asking those questions, because I'm just wondering, I'm just trying to get a base to start from. Okay. So then my next question would be, is who came up with the idea to separate the students?
Yeah, good question. So there are at least four of us in that meeting. The students are separated simply because they go into classrooms.
Like,
there's
the
only
titles?
So many classrooms.
Can you say the titles of the people in the meeting? Like when you say there are four of you, was it you, principal? Is it like who was in? Yeah.
Sure. It was myself, the admissions coordinator, the principal, and the president of the school. There, I honestly have been thinking about this and I cannot remember if the head football coach, or I guess he would have been the athletic director, was in that meeting or not. Sometimes he was, sometimes he was not. I cannot remember if he was in that meeting, but the other three definitely were with me.
Okay. And so,
basically the conversation was, okay, we're just preparing for testing day, right? Like making sure everything's kind of going through as you would with any event. Coming in, whether it be like a math tournament or an art day or whatever, like making sure all the administrative stuff is handled, everybody was on the same page in terms of like where students needed to go once they checked in and registered, etc. So the conversation was about, okay, where do students go after they check in? And you know, my perspective was just do it alphabetical order, like your A through whatever number 20 would have been in this room, and then keep going down the line. And other perspectives were, well, we have a higher percentage of Black applicants than we do white applicants, and we want to make sure that the rooms feel like the breakdown of the school demographically, as much as possible. And for those that are left over, there will be a couple of rooms that will have all Black students in it.
So their rooms didn't need to represent the demographic.
They just couldn't. Like they
but it wasn't, I'm saying like it wasn't a concern.
Well, it was a concern because the conversation was then, okay, for those rooms that are going to have all Black students, we need to make sure that the teachers in that room, A, are aware that this is not necessarily what all the classrooms look like. B, that they don't tell other teachers that they had all Black students in their classroom, because there was concern that teachers were not okay with having too many Black students either applying or in the school.
Okay, so what I'm understanding is that some of the rooms were mixed, some of the rooms, but then once you got to a certain point of mixed rooms, then the remainder of the rooms had either all Black or a large population of Black students in there. And then we had to make the teachers aware, which that's a whole nother, we'll get there. Make the teachers aware that yes, you have a lot of Black kids in here today, but don't worry, this isn't what your classrooms are going to look like. This is just for admissions testing.
That was the perception I had walking out of that meeting. Yes.
Was there any pushback to that idea when it was presented from anybody? Yes. Or yourself? Or
Yes, there was pushback on that idea. And it was, I believe that I raised the initial pushback and the president was backing me. And then there was conversation and then it ultimately ended up that was how we were moving forward.
Okay. Crystal, do you have anything you want to interject right here? I'm trying to
wrap your head around it.
Yes, I am.
It's weird because I've heard it before and hearing it again, it's like hearing it for the first time. Like it just seems so unbelievable. I do think it's important to note that, you know, at one time, De La Salle was a mostly white school with no girls. And I think that, at least I know two of the people in that room were both De La Salle students at one point, and now they work there and feel as though they have the better grasp on what would be accepted from the community. Which maybe empowered them to feel like they could make that decision. It's like my chest gets tight when I think about like warn the teachers, like, oh, don't worry, your classes during the school year are not going to look like this, which I had honestly not even thought about that angle. I was just thinking about that day. And just like,
yeah, it was more that day. I don't remember anyone saying specifically they were concerned.
Oh, so just like not all the other classrooms that day.
Correct. Yes.
Well, I have to be honest, that kind of changes my perspective on like the whole story, because I guess I was thinking that in the admissions testing, it was like all the white kids are in this room and then all the black kids are in this room. But I guess what it was that there's going to be we're going to diversify the classrooms as much as we can, but we have so many black students that are applying that we are going to have some classrooms that are just all black students.
Well, but isn't that we need to show the white people that we're not an all black school, you know, because you weren't worried about the perception of the black students. What they thought. You were worried about, well, we don't want to get white families in here and have them think that, you know, their child is going to be in a room with mostly black kids. Like that's
It's still bad, but I thought the story was that they were hiding all the black kids altogether.
No.
So there's still a certain level of black.
That, coach, when this story initially kind of is told to people, you're not the first person to think like that's what was happening. But I with Miss Marks in that, look, if you had just separated the students alphabetically, you probably would have had the same results.
At least that's justifiable to the community, right? Like, look, we just went straight to the alphabet and this is just what it is,
right?
But even still, I mean, if you were going to try to diversify the classrooms, they could have done better to make sure all of the classrooms were diverse to at least some extent. And that's, to me, where they dropped the ball in the room on that day. You should have just had a blanket system where people couldn't argue with it. Or if you want to show diversity, then every single classroom needs to be diverse.
Right. And there needs to not be a conversation about.
Right. And then now we need to have a conversation about these teachers, because why are you here?
Okay.
Why are you here with this type of thinking or your implicit bias or whatever about the black students that you are getting or the number of black students that you're getting in education, especially at this day and age? And goodness, especially in New Orleans, are you really mad about black students being in your class? Do you know where you are? Like, that's all.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So. So that's what happened that day. And, you know, after that, I found out kind of accidentally. I didn't know it was all that. I really thought it was just, honestly, I thought you had just warned teachers about how many Black students were in their room. So that's what I got. And I'm actually very glad that 2 days later, I had to go back to who had said that to me and say, like, I gotta talk to Jessica. I know you're gonna hate that. So when I sat in your office, it was very much so like, hey, why did you feel it was necessary to, you know, warn the teachers about the Black students? And your response was, I knew it was wrong when we made the decision. And I'm like, whoa, what? Like, I didn't expect any of that. So fast forward, I find out my first meeting after talking to you was with the assistant principal, who is the principal now. And I'm wondering if some of her justifications were shared by others in that room. So one of the things when I brought it up that to like defend this decision was, doesn't the end justify the means? If we're special because we're diverse and we experience white flight and we're not diverse anymore, then we lose what's special. So isn't it worth it to maintain our diversity? Is that a shared, was that like a, I'm so confused.
Was that the other side of the pushback or the justification for that decision? Because yeah, that idea is definitely disturbing.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't hear that argument in the meeting, or I don't remember hearing that. The main things that I heard when there was pushback against it was, yes, white flight, like the concern that white students would go back to their parents and say, oh, there was like all Black kids in my classroom or the majority. And then their parents, like, or the kids, like they're like that idea that that would be a problem for them. That was that's the one that sticks out. And I'm sure there was other things, but there, I didn't hear the argument of like, we're special because we're diverse and we need to make sure. Yeah.
Diversity.
Well, and part of the reason I bring that up is not everyone that I spoke to had that kind of reaction and that response. And my position has been through all of these conversations is not, I've never thought anybody should or like lose their job or nobody can improve, nobody can learn. Like that's never been it. But my, I guess my position is when someone feels that way, if that's you see that situation, because she said she wasn't in on the decision, but she knew about it.
You mean when they feel like white flight's going to be a concern?
Well, no, when you're justifying something like, well, isn't discrimination okay as long as you can be divert? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's like stupid logic. That's, yeah.
Yes.
Nonsensical, right? So my thing is, what I've always said is, if you have people that are in a room that will make that decision, or if you have someone and they can justify that decision like that, isn't it fair for me to say that those people need help when it comes to including all of the students at the school, right? Like that's my whole thing. It's, you know, if you talk about it, when I would go to the president or the principal and have these conversations, it's like, we're working on this. We talk about this all the time. Well, what is, like, we know what kind of conversations y'all have, but I do, I want to talk about this concept of white flight and fear of white flight.
Mm-hmm.
Was there data to support this fear, or is it based on an assumption?
For me, it felt like it was based on an assumption. I didn't see any, I didn't have any hard data to support that. Supposedly years ago, there was some study that was done, and this had been cited to me years before I ever got into admissions, that if your school reached a certain percentage of minority students, and that was the tipping point, and then it like wouldn't come back the other way or stay, like
you'd be stuck with mostly Black people for the rest of your life.
I know that's not how you're
right.
I know that's not how you're
Crystal. It's just like, hello, welcome to holidays, guys. That's my life. It's okay. We're all doing okay. Goodness.
Yeah.
I know you weren't saying that one.
I never saw any hard data about it. And I was always, I came from Washington State, and a couple of things. One is I thought I was like super inclusive and da da da. Well, turns out there just weren't any Black people anywhere I grew up. Right. Okay. That's so fair. Then I moved to New Orleans, totally got checked. Absolutely have learned a lot, still learning. But my thing has always been just do the right thing. If you're doing the right thing and it doesn't work and people leave or people do whatever, then fine.
Bye, Felicia. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Why are we trying to keep a certain population that has those negative values and belief systems and the way they treat people anyways? Like at today and in this day and age, we as a people, we want people to just do the right thing and stand up for what's right, and finances be damned and public opinion be damned, and right, make the hard decisions and do the right thing. And it was just like, that's not the right thing. So the person I have an issue with the most is in that room, whoever came up with that idea. And then when there was pushback, like, give us some time to debate this and come up with another solution before you just shut all the way down and make a decision that's just not right. That's not right.
Yeah. And I think it's completely the antithesis of the values of the school too, which I completely am behind and believe in. And I felt like if we had made our decisions actually based on those values, A, we would have never made that decision. And B, like the feared outcome that you're fearing right there, I think would prove to be false, because I just think it is so much more powerful than anything else.
So what are those LaSalian values? Because, you know, we don't have those.
Yeah, I mean, you don't spell them out, but you probably do have them. Uh-huh. But the five are faith in the presence of God, concern for poor and social justice, respect for all persons.
Oh.
Right? Quality education and inclusive community.
Wow. So yeah, that's in direct contradiction to
these are LaSalian core principles, right? So yes, when I reach out to the LaSalian district and express my concerns, I had to email multiple times to even get a response. And they just kept putting me off to someone else who ultimately they sent me to a Black woman in the community that really couldn't do anything for the LaSalle High School, but just maybe that I would relate to. And like, that was it. It was just like no conversation. Nobody wanted to talk about it. And that's my concern. Like, I always feel like when you hear about the LaSalian principles, like in theory, it sounds so great, right? Yes. And then in practice, at least at De La Salle, I was like, not so much. But I'm like, well, maybe this is just our school, or I'm even going to give it the city, Deep South, New Orleans. You know, everybody likes to come together for a good time in New Orleans, but as soon as the party is over, it's real segregated, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I reach out thinking like, no, this is not what LaSalian, like what the LaSalian community is about. And I really left the situation thinking, is it what the LaSalian community?
I mean, you have to ask, because it's in straight contradiction to what they say their principles are.
Yeah, really is.
And I think your point is good, Crystal, is that we're not like, you don't have to have an answer. We just want you to have a conversation, like an honest conversation about it. Like you, like just talking, like you don't need a solution. You might not come out of it, but just being honest and straightforward and transparent about this sort of stuff, I think would just bring everything forward.
I met with the superintendent of Catholic schools not too long ago. Took a very, very long time to meet with her personally. The diocese reached out to me, invited me in, had a conversation with me. I kept in touch with them. They've really been great. You know, I really hate the term, like, change takes time, progress takes time. It is true, but it's irritating. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when I finally, you know, speak to her, she was saying that the district or the diocese already, you know, they have been doing this kind of study and research on the lack of inclusion, what to do about it, the places where they fall short, not just in the schools, which is her arena, but also in the churches. And it seemed to me that one of the conversations that she has with the Archbishop is, you know, I think that when it comes to race, people are so afraid of what will happen when you do the right thing, that, or like, they want the perfect way to address the situation. And until they find that perfect way, they're never gonna make a move. So then what happens? No one ever makes
a move. You're never gonna make a move.
But I think if you were having a conversation on the front end, then the four people in that room that day would have made a very different decision, because it's almost like accountability. If everybody's involved on a conversation and like are actually talking about it, whether they agree with each other or not, there's a just, I think there's.
If you had a Black person in administration in that room, that conversation wouldn't have happened. Because I guarantee you, if I had been sitting in that room when the conversation came up, it would not have been. Now, it probably would have happened behind my back when there would have been a second meeting when I wasn't there, because I've experienced that. But while I'm sitting there, it would not have come up. So it's just like, to me, it all comes back to when it comes to the school and how they operate, it starts with the administration and showing that you believe in diversity and inclusion based, like, show it through your hiring practices.
Yeah.
Agreed. We don't do that.
That's a start.
It's a start.
And hiring. And then now, if you know that you have teachers on there that you have to go and warn, goodness, you need to start educating the teachers that you already have too, because it doesn't matter what you do for inclusion if you're not educating the teachers that might have that whatever opinions about certain students or whatever, then the students are still going to feel that when they walk into their classroom.
Yeah.
You've got to educate them on, hey, this is why maybe you need to be a little bit more open, or you better dang well be the best accurate and hide it, because you shouldn't be giving off that impression in the classroom. It starts with the administration, but then it's going to your teachers, and then you can talk about making the students first and inclusion and doing all the different programs and stuff with them.
Why we were concerned about protecting anybody that didn't want to be there for that reason is beyond me. But
that's what I don't get. It's like, you went through all of this trouble to protect, to keep someone who wouldn't want to be in the building if there were too many Black people there. That's what doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, you did admissions. Another part of the admissions process is open house.
And, yes.
Okay. So I know that, you know, I had Alex and Ella on here talking about, like, the first time they kind of notice it. One of the things they mentioned, one of the things we talked about was open house. And my first year, I noticed, like, hey, we're matching races. Like, when a family comes in to take a tour through the school, we're grabbing a kid of the same race and we're, you know, they're doing the tour. And I brought it up very, like, what's funny is it wasn't accusatory, because it just, in my mind, it was like, it had to be an accident. Like, am I tripping? You know what I mean? So I just brought it up, like, hey, is it just me? Or are we matching families, like Black families with a Black guide and white family? No. We're just doing it by interest, and just kind of brush me off. Not you, I guess that would be the admissions coordinator. But okay, so you're a part of that process. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, open house, I saw it too. I'm not gonna lie, I definitely saw it too. It was always, when brought up, it was always answered with, we're just matching interests, we're just, you know, whatever. Again, this is one of those things where I would have been like, all of our students are wonderful representatives of De La Salle, just put them in a queue and let them go with the family that's coming up. Like, really not that difficult. And I believe in all of our students enough that the tour guides we've trained can walk them through and do a good job. Like, it's going to be okay. But that was it. The person in the admissions coordinator definitely felt it needed to be, planned to a degree that she had control over. And that's the way that that worked.
Alex mentions, because Alex is Asian, he mentioned that because we didn't have Asian families come in, he never, you had to miss all those classes to do training for admissions, and you had to be there for hours to do a tour. And he never got chosen to do a tour. Like every year they made him go through the training until his senior year, they gave him one family. He goes, well, he basically said, well, I guess like they felt bad. They had to kick me something. So they let me like join another tour when he was a senior. So every single year he missed those classes. He did all of that. And he never got, and he was an amazing representative of our school. Wasn't he like representing the United States in gymnastics, like in the world gymnastics championship.
I have a question for y'all. Is a lot of these decisions that are definitely questionable questionable, is it all seeming to fall back on like certain people, or would you say that it's still kind of like the administration team as a whole?
Well, you have to remember, we're not like, because how many assistant principals do you have at your school?
Again, I have like 9 or 10.
Okay.
Many of them.
We've got our like admissions, or our administrative team is president, principal, sometimes an assistant principal. We don't always have one. Right now, I believe it's called dean of students, or dean of academics. Then we've got a dean of students who's like the disciplinarian and director of admissions. That's our whole team. So, right?
Don't forget the admissions coordinator.
So she's not technically like, when you say administration, she wouldn't pop up like online, but she's there. Definitely like in my mind, she's in charge. Like
she's in the meeting. She's in the meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's actually kind of genius, because like you kind of get to do what you want, but you never have to take the blame for anything. Like that's so smart, right? It is kind of the same people, but then I think the other side of that is, like I said, in the time that I was there in 8 years, there were like 20 different administrators at the school, and never did they post that an opening was happening for teachers. Never did they, they always just essentially found a white guy mostly that they were comfortable with and just put him in the position. Like the current dean of students, whom I love, and I actually went to school with him and he's great. He wanted to teach a business class. He hadn't been in education a long time. I think he had taught at De La Salle years and years and years ago. God, please forgive me if you're upset about hearing this. I hope you're not. And he applied to teach a business class, and they responded, hey, have you ever thought about being dean of students?
Good times.
And that's how he got that job. And it was, he kind of gave them a run for their money, because I really want to say that because he's a white guy, they just assumed that he would go along and agree with their mentality. And no, he does not. He does not agree with, the hair rules and a lot of the things that they do. And they actually have to give him a hard time to, one of the students said to me last year, Miss Marks, it seems like they bully the dean of students to bully us.
Because he's just trying to let it be and fight real battles, and they're coming down on him. Wow. Yes.
Yeah, like your hair's the wrong color, or you need to take those braids out. And like, even if you agree, even if a parent is like, okay, we'll do it this weekend. No, you need to do it today, or they can't come back to school tomorrow. Why? Who is it hurting?
Right.
He's the one that said to me, like, at what point is the hair not a distraction, but your reaction to it is the distraction, which is the truth. Kids don't care.
Well, and also what's more important, the kid getting education and being in a safe environment or at home because mom ain't gonna be able to stay home because the kid couldn't get the braids
on. What's more important is that we have Black students, but that they're not they're not too Black. That's what's important, not too Black.
What about grace as a value? I feel like a church organization.
One of the principles was quality education.
I am actually shocked by the fact that a student noticed that the dean of students was being bullied to bully students. Like, that's not good.
And what do you say to, I mean, again, like a lot of my, other than admissions testing, which obviously, like I said, big turning point for me, it was when I realized that the kids were noticing. Because kids, you know, students would ask me questions and I would just kind of brush it off or change the subject because it is uncomfortable. And then, you know, the more students notice, it's like, well, how dumb do you look protecting these people who don't really, I can't even say that they don't care. I mean, it's so racist. Yeah. I can't even say that they don't like give a shit about me because I don't think that's the case, but they don't value or see the, you know, I am Black, right?
They're not stressed out about that because they have they've risen above to see that that's not what we're here to do at the end of the day.
Yeah. I don't know what they think they're there to do, you know. I don't know, like, okay, I'm looking at right now the I Am De La Salle thing. And I wrote about some of this in my letter of resignation to this school when I said I wasn't coming back, not because I didn't want to, but because I felt like I couldn't. And, you know, I gave it to, and I said this before, I gave it to the corporate board, the alumni boards, the LaSallian district, the diocese. I gave it to the administration at school. No response. Nobody even acknowledged it. And one of the things I said is like, we have this thing on our website, I Am De La Salle. And I can say that more than a lot of the other teachers, because I was a student at De La Salle. Like for me, I've only lived in New Orleans when De La Salle was a part of my life. So like, it is a part of like, you know, if I'm in New Orleans, I associate it. De La Salle is like home, right? So one of the things that it says is, may I always have the dignity and integrity to stand up for my convictions. It says it on there. And for me, like I take that seriously, not just for myself, but to teach my students to do the same thing. And that's kind of where it became like, I can't sit in here and talk to the students about being good people, about speaking up when something's wrong. And these things are happening. You know, when I'm in the handbook meeting, there was a Black man in there, the only Black woman in there. And I'm saying, you know, well, why can't boys have a part like in their hair, like you use clippers if you're Black to put a part in your hair instead of comb. And like very aggressively, the disciplinarian at the time says, you know, well, if Black people can't have a part in their hair, how do you have one in yours? Right. And so I'm sitting in a room of my peers and this is the response I get, which is really like loaded for so many reasons. You know, I straighten my hair. It's different. It doesn't matter. But like, that's the kind of pushback I get, right? Or when I say like, you have dreads in the handbook, that is very pointed language. You are targeting a group. White people can have dreads. White people can have dreads. That's the only answer I got. And it's like, can we please stop making it like trying to make it seem like I'm the crazy one? Like, can we at least acknowledge it? And that was the meeting in which finally the principal said, okay, I can acknowledge that it's discrimination, but we're not ready to change the rules because if he doesn't know how to enforce them, then the Black students will think that the dean of students is arbitrarily picking on them, right? So you just said to me, a Black person, I can admit we discriminate and I just have to sit there and eat it. Like, what am I supposed to do with that? Because to me, it seems like the problem is the person you have enforcing the rules if you're afraid that people are going to think he's arbitrarily picking on them. It's not these, you're okay discriminating against a whole group of people to keep the white guy in charge comfortable. The problem ain't the group of people.
Right.
That's not the problem.
Well, and it sounds like you were in the room with the people who could have done something about them.
Yes.
Like, y'all are the group that can change things right now, and whatever you say, whoever is going to have to deal with it. Like, I get it.
And, you know, when I had the conversation with the principal, who I think, you know, he's president now, largely. This was, you know, pretty much his decision. He was also the head basketball coach, the head basketball team being all Black kids, except for his son, right? Or nephew, depending on which year. So it's like, for me, when I had the meeting with him about making this decision, and he did sit back in his chair, like, all right, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about white flight. And I'm just like, do we not see that I'm Black? Like, am I the person to have this? I mean, I get, on the one hand, I get what he's saying. But on the other hand, like, you want to have this conversation with me about how to keep white people that would otherwise leave if there were Black people here? Like, I'm not the one, right? So we have this conversation, and, you know, I go to the basketball game that night and I see him coaching all Black kids. And I'm thinking, like, how disappointed would they be?
Yeah.
If they knew that this is what happens. That we're sending emails about, like, you need to call this kid down about their hair. Like, y'all worried about the wrong thing. Let's worry about our ACT average, because it ain't good. Like, I don't get it.
Oh, yeah, man. No, those kids adore him.
They do.
And they would just be crushed, I think. Like,
but they would also, I think, like, that's part of the complexity of being Black, is that there is so much of that, right? Like, I said, he and I had a great relationship. Every faculty meeting, like, he was one of the few adults I would go out of my way to talk to, right up until the end when it was just like too much. But I can say, I don't think that he disrespects me as a person. I don't think that he dislikes me as a person. I just think that it would be his preference to remove my personhood from my race. So then he didn't have to hear me talk about that stuff, you know, because there was never an issue with me. And I was always taken seriously until it was the issue of race. And then it's almost like, well, you're Black, which makes you sensitive, so you don't get it.
Yeah, so you don't get, your voice isn't as strong because you're being emotional right now.
Yeah, you're being emotional. And
the whole issue of white flight and why that decision was being made, that's a little bit disturbing to me. Well, it's a lot disturbing to me. It's messed up on all levels. And it's like, yes, we should just be saying bye. I'm not sure why we were trying to hold on to a community that would feel that way anyways. But it also seems like I said, like, a lot of it still comes down to financial. And you wanting to keep, I guess, numbers of people around that would pay tuition. It sounds like everybody pays tuition, so I don't understand that. Also, my thought was the school doesn't seem to have enough faith in its educational experience to keep the student body population high because of how good the school is and because of how excellent we are in its academic programs and sports and the things that you provide the community, that you're so worried about numbers due to more Black students coming in. And if one of the pillars is faith, then you're failing on the first pillar.
And what I said was, do we not believe in our own principles?
Right. I think that if you genuinely operated and focused on those things, this fear stuff, which I like to call false evidence appearing real, would go away. Like, and whatever was there could be addressed head on. Like, I just, like, to make decisions because of fear of an unknown type of factor, that doesn't feel right to me.
And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when we talk about, you throw a big word out there, or two words rather, white privilege, this is exactly what we're talking about. Decisions are made behind closed doors to keep a white population happy, or to meet the needs and sensibilities of a white population, damned how Black people might feel. And so you're privileging them, or you're giving that preference over to another group. And it's just like, this is what we're talking about. It is still out there. It's still happening even today. After everything going, you know, in the world.
Lord, I think that we could probably talk about this forever, but
yeah.
I think that what I want to leave with is, you know, just like we're talking about these fear-based decisions and the belief that you're experiencing the success that you're experiencing because you're making decisions based on this fear, when not realizing that those decisions are likely keeping you from thriving and going to the next level. And I just, it's sad for the students, which again is why I started all this. It's sad for the students. De La Salle is so close. Like, it could be so great.
Yes.
It has some growing to do. And it starts with just acknowledging, like, man, kind of like when I sat in there with the principal at the time and said, you know, this came to my attention, and he was just quiet for a second. He was like, yeah, we effed up, you know? And I think, like, across the board, there just needs to be like a, man, we effed up, but we're going to fix it now. There's nobody's perfect. Everybody has to start somewhere. Start where you are, acknowledge where you are, and try to move forward.
Be open about it. Be open to the dialogue of this. Hey, let's hear some ideas. Let's hear some opinions. Let's hear some ways that we can take the first step and not just shut it down immediately after a 10-minute debate. And then we're moving on being racist.
Yeah. Well, this was great. I really appreciate you just coming on and talking about it. Even like, it's been a real process for me just trying to work through my feelings about it and the fact that I never said anything, and then how just things seem to kind of snowball for me and get worse and worse, and then just being in a dark place and trying to come out of it. But I can honestly say that, like, to have you here talking about it, not just having the conversation privately, like, I feel like a weight has been lifted, because even though it wasn't my decision, I wasn't in the room for some reason, it's just felt like mine, like, this is my problem and my, and it, I can honestly say for the first time in like years, like, it doesn't feel like mine. So thank you for that. I don't want it. Thank you.
Yeah, I hear you. And I want to echo what you said too. Like, this isn't to get anybody like in trouble or like call for anybody's head or anything like that. I believe in De La Salle too. I believe in the people that I worked with, even, like, I think they are good people. I just think that this is not a good decision, and decisions like that are not good decisions, and that they need to be talked about and revisited, and other perspectives need to be brought in.
We need to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yes.
That's all it is. All right. Well, thank you guys for today. Ellie will be back maybe not next week, maybe in 2 weeks, because, you know, time, schedules, whatever.
Right.
And Jessica will be in touch. Thank you so much for joining today. Before I go, I want to acknowledge that it's not easy to have that discussion on a podcast for anyone to hear. So, Jessica, I appreciate you. You too, Coach E. It is a shame, though, that you and I weren't having these conversations all the years we were at De La Salle together. Seems like we could have made a difference. But I choose to believe that everything played out the way it was meant to, and we are right where we're supposed to be. I'm trying to trust the process. Admittedly, easier said than done sometimes. And with that, I'll send you all out into the world to talk about the hard stuff and include others until we meet again. I'm Crystal J, also known as Miss Marks, and thank you for listening to Until the Bell Rings.